everyone. We made it to Friday. Woohoo! Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have a great show today. Ice Cube is going to join us.
Who is Jenna?
Ice Cube.
There we go.
He's going to join us on set. The Giants are closing in on a record-breaking deal with OBJ. Doug Peterson is disappointed in his offense, especially after last night and an odd night for Tyrod Taylor. That's where we start today. Browns and Eagles, Thursday Night Football. Browns had made it very clear this preseason that Tyrod Taylor will be the starter over rookie Baker Mayfield. But when Taylor had to leave the game last night with an injured wrist, Browns had to be scared. He did return to finish out the first half, but never returned to the sideline after halftime. Baker came in and he sputtered with the first unit, only throwing for 76 yards and a pick on the night. CC, before we get to Baker, what do you make of Tyrod Taylor getting back in the game after leaving with an injury? Were you surprised the Browns brought him back in a preseason game?
Get the Browns. If I'm Tyrod, I'm going back in the game.
Yeah.
Like, why would I continue to tell you guys this. I think if I'm not on the show, this happens to be my show, there's something. I'm either on vacation or I'm doing something very, very, very important that I wouldn't be here. I ain't gonna let nobody sit in my seat. Ain't nobody gonna be co-hosting First Things First on Chris Carter. No, we trying to establish ourselves. If we've been doing this 15, 20 years, yeah, I'll take 6 weeks vacation, have people run in and out and everything. No, 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 no. Tyrod knows who he is, all right? No one is giving Tyrod a whole bunch of confidence even since he's left college football. When he went to Baltimore, he was pleased to be able to develop there. But they never told him, hey, you're going to be a starter. No one's ever promised him anything. He went to Buffalo. You know what they did since he got them in the playoffs to end their drought? Oh,
they got rid of him.
They got rid of him.
Get rid of him while
there are certain players in the NFL. They know who they are. They have great perspective, great insight. They don't think they're someone else. He knows that kid, Baker Mayfield, the first opportunity is going to get in there. You said it. Cleveland Browns, they're pubbing him up. They want him in there. You think he's not seeing all that? Why would I give him the chance? If I'm not hurt, if I don't think I'm going to hurt the team, I'm going back in there. There's more work to be done. And that's why you saw him immediately get his helmet from the training staff and immediately place himself on the sideline with the coaches to let them know I'm available to go back in and do my job. That is the mentality, especially of someone who is a journeyman and someone that can be replaced easily by Baker Mayfield. No, Tyrod did the right thing. That's what I would do that. I would do that even late in my career. Guys would know, don't come in for me. And guys like, the coach told me to come in for you. No, I'm staying in. And Denny Green would be like, Chris, come out. And I'd be like, okay.
Okay, but you have to assume that the Browns want to take care of him. The Browns know that they need him for the games that actually count. So why would the Browns, despite what he says,
want to go in? I don't think it was the type of injury that they were worried about further injury. I think that, listen, I thought when it happened, I tweeted it out, I thought he broke his wrist. I thought there was a fracture in his wrist. It bent funny to me. I was devastated for him.
People are going
to
amputate his arm. But football players, we have to play. When you're under, when you can lose your job, all right? Like, he knew he wasn't injured.
But he's already been named the starter, so why would he lose his job?
Hold on a second. Wait, let me do this real quick. Because if he had a broken wrist, though, he wouldn't have been able to go
in. He wouldn't have been allowed.
Of course.
They wouldn't have given him his helmet.
No.
They would have removed that variable from him.
Exactly. That's the point I'm making is he's on the sideline. At first, right after he goes down, players start calling over the training staff. He hops up and runs. They then take him into the locker room, assuming to do an x-ray. They realize he does not have a broken wrist. And then exactly what you're describing is what I think happened, which is that he said, no, like, I can't. I have been named the starter, and I am the starter in name. But I also don't just have a first-round pick behind me. I have the number one overall pick of the draft behind me, a guy who you, I think, very intelligently yesterday pointed out the team on its Twitter account is putting out, letting him goof on the GM. Like, as much hype surrounding this player as anyone in the draft. I cannot get Wally pipped here. Like, that's not going to happen to me. It's going to happen to him eventually in the pregame. I think Troy Aikman mentioned it, that Tyrod's the 29th starting quarterback for the Browns in the last 20 years or 10 years. And pretty soon Baker's going to be the 30th. We all know, is Strahan that said it actually, that eventually Baker's going to take over. This is a unique situation because in the meeting before the show, our producer Ketta said, you know, for the vast majority of starting quarterbacks, if you have any type of injury in a preseason game, no matter how minor, your coach isn't letting you go in.
Totally agree.
Right. This is an outlier situation.
And those quarterbacks know they don't need to go in because they have solidified their position not only with the coach but with the organization.
And is this – so the only question would be, in your eyes, something like this, did the Browns – was he at further jeopardy for further injury by going back in the football game?
What difference does it make if they're going to put the kid in anyway? Like, I mean, football players, other players play with nicks and bruises and bumps. That's what he had. Once they got past, is he injured or not, we know what the inevitable is, all right? Baker Mayfield is going to play. And as a veteran player, you would be naive, not being aware of what's going on around you, if you would think that, you know something, I'm just going to let him play the rest of this 3.5 quarters of the game. That would not be a good professional move.
And
now, I don't expect people who watch football to understand that mentality, but Tyrod has the right mentality, and the coaching staff understood that.
And I said yesterday on the show that the one of the reasons I was excited to watch yesterday's game was Tyrod has done everything in his power to hold off Baker. Because Baker's played up until last night, he played well in the first two preseason games. But Tyrod hadn't made a mistake yet. Tyrod was 75% of his passes, led the team on scoring drives. And we mentioned yesterday that, barring injury, Tyrod was going to be the week one starter. But the narrative could shift with a bad Tyrod Taylor game and a great Baker Mayfield game. It could have really shifted with a Tyrod Taylor game where they haven't scored points and he gets dinged.
What would the question be if Tyrod had not come back in? What would the first question starting the show be?
Right. Is Baker Mayfield now going? Oops.
And you know what Tyrod did? He removed that question by coming back into the game.
Except that Baker did come out in the second half and didn't play well. He actually had probably his
worst
more
preseason
horror
game.
Games, yeah, that he's had.
But he doesn't know that going into it.
Correct. He doesn't. Except that he has, he has the notion that he's the starting quarterback, plus the general manager who has a history of when he makes a
Baker
declaration.
Baker Mayfield does not have that notion.
No, she's saying Tyrod does.
Tyrod does not think that he is like a starter. He thinks, I'm a guy that right now I'm actually just driving the car. He can't think that he's a starter with Baker Mayfield being the number one overall pick. Does that make sense to you guys?
No, it makes sense, except that we have talked the last couple weeks. I only bring that up about John Dorsey having worked at different organizations where once he makes a declaration that someone's going to sit, they sit. It's not like the situation in Buffalo where maybe A.J. McCarron is healthy again. He could play. Maybe Josh Allen will play. It's been pretty much stated.
Right, but the one thing that can change it is injury.
Correct.
And that's why he was trying to make clear to everyone, I'm not hurt, that it was a different situation. I thought in real time watching it, he was seriously hurt. I didn't think there'd be any question about it. If you have a fracture in your wrist, even whether it's hairline or serious, you're going to be out a few weeks until that heals, non-throwing hand or not, unless you're a defensive lineman where they can just put a cast on it. Like, I thought he was significantly injured. When he came back on the field and there was nothing on his wrist, I said, oh, okay, so it's not broken. They obviously did the x-ray. And then he wanted to remove all doubt because Chris is right that every show in America would be asking, even if the report was the exact same injury report, no fractures, just got hurt, the question would be, okay, is Baker the starter now? Now, maybe not if Baker plays very poorly, but there was no way to know if Baker was going to play very
so
poorly.
So quickly, before we move on, what did you think of the way Baker played last night? Who had a better game, Tyrod or Baker?
Neither one of them played well. Their offense, they sputtered. The best player on their offense, I thought, was Carlos Hyde.
Yeah.
And you can see he's a quality running back. He's going to add a lot to their offense. They need another wide receiver. How dependable will their tight end be? That's going to be proven out over the regular season. He wasn't creating a lot of separation. Very good athlete, good prospect, good project. But Jarvis Landry is not enough from a wide receiving threat. They need Josh Gordon. They need someone else to be able to step up so we can look at the quarterbacks and be like, no, this is a football team. As an offense, they didn't play well. All right? That's how you get 5 points. All right. There's no way you can leave a game with 5 points unless you're playing against the 85 Bears, Ray Lewis, and the Ravens, and be like, hey, I'm happy. No, no NFL team's going to be happy with that. So neither one of them played well. The offensive line did not help them. But also, they're going against a good to great defensive unit with great personnel. So, no, there's no need to say which one of these guys looked better. They didn't look good as an offense moving forward. So try to make the distinction between, Tyrod looked better, Baker looked better. I can't do that. Offensively, they didn't look good.
The thing you said there that I think is most interesting is you believe they need another receiver, that Jarvis Landry, as wowing as he's been in practice, as big of a story as he's been through Hard Knocks, and as good as he'd been in the first couple preseason games, that you don't think he is enough of a speed threat for this team right now to be the offense they
want
to be.
You need more variances. When Philadelphia decided they wanted to come after the Browns last night, they couldn't stretch the field. They couldn't throw the ball down there with the guy who they were afraid of. No, Jarvis Landry doesn't do that. Quality wide receiver, but they need Josh Gordon. He would add a big punch to their lineup.
Best player for the Browns yesterday was Myles Garrett, and we'll talk more about him later. He looked like the guy they drafted, different guy they drafted number one overall a year ago.
And then speaking of receivers, Dez Bryant's name is back in the mix. We will talk about that as well. But coming up on the other side, are the New York Giants on the verge of a comeback season for the ages? That's next on First Things First.
Fox Sports Golf host Shane Bacon here, and with summer winding down, I wanted to tell all First Things First listeners about an exclusive offer from TeeOff.com. Ridgewood Country Club isn't the only must-play course in the tri-state area. The golf club at Mansion Ridge is a Jack Nicklaus design that boasts the same pristine conditions at a parkland-style course. But if you're looking for a links or a beachfront-style course, check out a collection of thousands of other great golf courses across the country at teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and start booking tee times without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time, plus as a valued listener to the Clubhouse podcast, that's my podcast, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. And if you like this golf stuff, come on over and give my podcast a listen, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I talk about golf. I have guests that like golf. It's pretty golfy. I just said golf way too much. That's a lot of golf. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. Listen to it. All right, back to the show.
Moving on to Odell Beckham, who some could say has had a quieter preseason than I have, and I did literally nothing. Odell has flown so far under the radar, the Giants are finally closing in on a contract extension. Two sides progressing towards a record-breaking deal for the young receiver. Hearing this could actually get done by the start of the season. And Nick sure makes you happy that his hair is as yellow as ever.
It's almost white now, yeah.
CeCe, how important is it to get OBJ's record-breaking deal done by week one?
I don't think it's that important. I think that right now both sides realize that they want to be together. Odell's doing his part. The Giants have always done their part. They've gotten fairly close to a deal. It's not important that it's done week number one when you know you're close, like you know you're going to have the money. The player has the confidence he can go out there and not be worried about a career-ending injury. So, to me, what date it gets done, long as it gets done the first couple of weeks into the season, it really wouldn't matter to me. There is no big difference in getting it done the last week of the preseason game or getting it done 10 days into the regular season. It's not a do or die situation. What it is, though, is it's if they're on the same page and the deal is close, then both parties know it. I believe that you can move on without having the deal signed.
So I actually talked to Odell this weekend, and their contract stuff never came up, which says to me, I mean, I think he believes this is getting done soon, because in the past, this has been a source of extreme anxiety for him from even a year prematurely when we were with him in Los Angeles or when he had been asked about it prior to this offseason. And I do think it's noteworthy that when you look at the draft class that he's a part of, two of the other best players in that draft class who don't have deals, one of them hasn't even spoken to the coach in Khalil Mack. One of them is threatening hold not only hold out of preseason games, but regular season games in Aaron Donald. And Odell's done none of those things. Now, those two players had more capital to spend, so to speak, as far as not having off-the-field incidents. But Donald also held out all of last preseason before showing up, and the Rams forgave his fines. I agree with C in that there are certain teams. I'll take a team I used to cover, the Houston Texans. They just had a rule We do not negotiate contracts once the season begins. So if you do not get a new contract prior to the first day of the regular season, you're not getting one until the end of the regular season. If the Giants had a deadline like that, then it'd be a big deal if it gets done here in the next 12 days or whatever. But they don't have that rule. So what this tells me is they're getting this deal done in short order, which was not a sure thing. I mean, there was real speculation about whether or not the Giants would let him play out this year, see how he acts. Put the franchise tag on him, see how he acts. Like, they had the ability to control him without any long-term commitment, have a year-to-year control over him for the next three seasons. And I know Coach Mangini talked about how that could be attractive for the team. He's getting $9 million this year.
Right.
What now? He's probably going to come close to doubling that. It wouldn't have, in my eyes, been the right thing to do with the best player on your football team, but it was an option to them. They're not going that route, which I believe to be best for both parties involved.
All right, so if things are good and Odell's going to be there and he's happy and you're calling him one of the best players on the team, if not the best player, you have Saquon Barkley who will probably come back from that hamstring snag and be back. How good could this offense be, CC, this year?
That offensive line, I still believe that they can't be a top 10 offense. Because of the offensive line. I believe the offensive line holds them back. Yeah, because if you can't block the quarterback, if you can't have a powerful running game, Nate Solder is a good player, paying him $15 million, but he is not a good run blocker. He's an adequate run blocker, very good pass protector, big guy, very, very athletic, but he's still limited, even at that price tag. So I expect them to have some huge problems from an offensive line standpoint. And if you can't block people, no matter who you got on the outside, you can't run the ball on a regular. If you can't dictate, it's starting to get cold. You can't dictate when we're going to run, it becomes a problem. Until they prove that to me, I just think they'll be a middle-of-the-pack offense.
So you think the offensive line is far worse than I do. I think the right side, the right tackle
position. No, I know the offensive line. I'm not guessing about that.
Well, then you know something about Nate Solder. They don't, because they don't think Nate Solder's a middle-of-the-line blocker. Go ahead.
I've been analyzing Nate for a long time. Tom Brady's got one of the quickest releases in the game. Nate Solder is not a dominant left tackle. He's a good left tackle. He is not a great run blocker. That's just who he is. It's not my fault. He's just on the Giants. We're analyzing the Giants.
No,
he happens to be their tackle.
Right, but they I think, understandably, are expecting more from
sometime
him than
you are. Free agency, you pay you more
overpay,
because
sure.
You don't have him.
It's an auction and whoever.
And that's one of the reasons why New England decided to allow him to walk.
And so, they have Solder, who I guess I'm baking in that he will at least be one of the, not the best, but one of the better. He doesn't have to be the best because he's the highest paid, but one of the better left tackles in the league. I don't know what Will Hernandez will be as a pro. I know they spent a very high draft pick on him as a guard. And their skill position guys, there's only a handful of teams that can look eye to eye with them skill position-wise. The Saints can, the Steelers can. The Chiefs can, the Rams can, and that's about the list as far as running back, wide receiver, tight end, secondary wide receiver in the Steelers' case. Like, they have all the weaponry you'd like. See, I look at the Giants and say they have one big weakness on offense, the right side of their offensive line. I know you think Eli's still, at the very least, an average or above average quarterback and a ton of talent as far as skill position guys. To me, if this team's not a top 10 offense, it's a disappointment with the money they've spent, the draft capital they've spent on offensive guys.
Yeah, there's no problem with you thinking that, but you're giving them a lot of things. You're giving their head coach, who's going to be the head coach and the offensive coordinator. You're saying that he's going to be able to create a plan. We don't know that. He wasn't very successful in Cleveland as a head coach. So why would I just say, oh, Pat Shurmur's going to put it all together? Why would I say that their busted right tackle is going to be a formidable player? He's not. He's not a good football player.
That I totally agree with you.
And that's not going to change. It's hard to hide a tackle. You can hide a center. You can hide a guard. But you can't hide a tackle. I know who Nate Solder is a player, regardless of what they spent for him in free agency. It's like Olivier Vernon. When they got him, I knew who he was. He's not a 15-sack-a-year guy, but they're paying him $17 million. He's exactly like Nate Solder. You pay more because you have to go out and get them. So that's who they are, though. That's not my fault. We'll see. If they can prove they can run the ball, their chances of creating man-to-man on the outside and making it easier for Odell, then that will be real. Then they'll have a chance to be a top-10 offense. I think they're going to be around the middle of the pack, and that's not a slight.
All right, let's take a break there. We'll talk about this some more. But coming up, how worried should the Eagles be about Nick Foles' struggles last night? Because that's what he did. Struggle. Next on First Things First. Time for some stories to start your morning. Back to Thursday Night Football, Eagles-Browns. If you watch the game, it would be hard not to notice how much Myles Garrett owned Nick Foles. He had two sacks, including one for a safety and two quarterback hits. CC, what'd you make of Garrett's performance last night?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, he's the type of athlete I think that we forget. He missed the first part of last season, yeah. Missed five games, yeah. Still had seven sacks. If he don't have 15 sacks this year, I'll be shocked. Phenomenal athlete, explosive. I mean, he'll in the next 2 years be up for defensive MVP.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's who they drafted him to be. That's who he profiled out to be. He is in a – listen, there's a lot of freakish DNs in this league. From an athletic standpoint, he is near the top of that list. I'm not putting him at the top, but he measures out as
such. He's got some pretty good video playing basketball, too. He's probably got more extensive video shooting than Ben Simmons. Check him out on YouTube. Check it out.
All right, that's next hour. Myles Garrett shooting turnaround jump shots.
Sticking with the Browns now, they reportedly still have interest in Dez Bryant, and talks are ongoing. They believe he has not fallen off as a player, and they want to add as many weapons as possible. Nick, what'd you make of this latest development?
Well, I think the Browns are trying to prolong this to where they can keep in contact with Dez until after week one, to where if they were to bring him in, the contract's not guaranteed. But I want to go back to something you said earlier about the Browns needing a speed wide receiver. You said they need more help at wide receiver, but it doesn't sound to me like the guy you were describing is the guy who Dez Bryant is.
No, they need Josh Gordon. They need a 1,000-yard Josh Gordon to be able to help that offense. Tyrod, Jarvis Landry, man, they're going to be able to run the ball. Carlos Hyde's a good player. Dez is a plan B. Their plan A is get Josh Gordon back up to full speed.
All right, on to the Chiefs now. They're wide out. Tyreek Hill had some interesting comments yesterday about how good he and quarterback Pat Mahomes might be. He said, quote, "I feel like me and Pat could be the best." Now, keep in mind, last season, Tyreek was seventh in receiving yards despite missing a game. Nick, do you agree with Tyreek?
I think if he would have added something to it. I think they can be the best deep ball combo in the league this year, potentially. I don't think they're going to be the best quarterback wide receiver duo. Mahomes is essentially a rookie, and Tyreek does certain things very, very well as a wide receiver, but he's obviously not your prototypical can-do-it-all, run-every-route on the route tree wide receiver. But I think this type of play, they can be the best in the league at that. Mahomes uncorks one and Tyreek gets behind the defense. I do believe that.
Yeah, I believe they'll probably lead the NFL in most plays unscripted, like when the quarterback's scrambling and Tyreek decides to go deep. I think they're going to be very good at that. That's not hard to get in sync with a young quarterback. But the combination of Kelce, Sammy Watkins, they should have a special group of wide receivers. Now, as a group, I wish he would have said that. As a group, we can be the best in the NFL because he has no chance of being the best NFL wide receiver.
All right, we'll end with one of Dak Prescott's most important offensive linemen, center Travis Frederick. Frederick was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and it is unclear when he will return. CeCe, how will the loss of Travis Frederick impact Dak and the Cowboys' offense this season?
When we talked about Dallas and the amount of resources that they had put into their offensive line, and you have Zeke and Dak on their first contract, so if that offensive line they really can't sustain an injury because they are the heart and soul of that football team. The defense, who we believe is going to be better, and I believe can be a top 10 defense, but they're not going to be as effective if they have to play 31 minutes a game and that time of possession that the Cowboys, because they can't run the ball. Now, besides a left tackle, a center is the most important cog to an offensive line because he is the quarterback. He's calling the protections. He's making all the line adjustments for all the line stunts. So a center is very, very important. And we want our quarterback and Dak in year three to grow. Man, Travis Frederick not being in there, that's going to hurt Dak. So he's got more responsibility in reading the front, reading the defense and helping the line make sure they get into the right calls. And it's an unfortunate injury. I had never heard of it. If I didn't have my good friend Mark Schlereff that gave me the information and I listened to a podcast with the information on it, man, this is awful. Very, very scary stuff. You're talking about paralysis. You're talking about long-term damage potentially. Now, they did get in there and diagnose him quick, and he's already received a second treatment. So the prognosis does look good, but I mean, there's a chance he might miss all the season. I don't believe the Dallas Cowboys can recover from Travis Frederick, who's probably the best at his position in the league.
Well, so that last part is a key part. We talk about their offensive line, the three great offensive linemen they have. Tyron Smith is one of the best left tackles in football, and at times is the best. Zach Martin is one of the best guards in football, and you could argue is the best. Travis Frederick is the best center in the league. Like, he's the best in the league at what he does. And let's also not forget, how did the Cowboys spend their second-round pick on an offensive lineman, a rookie who they would like, theoretically, to play right tackle? You know who a rookie right tackle would like to have? A veteran awesome center telling him about the checks, the protection shifts, the different things that Travis Frederick can do pre-snap. That is one of the reasons, in addition to everything he does post-snap, that makes him as good as he is. And this is, we talk about teams adding to their strength. The Eagles, they have a great D-line. Let's go add more D-linemen. The Cowboys are now subtracting from their strength. And nobody's got a deep offensive line. That's the thing. Is you might have a deep D-line. Like, I don't know there's a team in the league, no matter how good your starters on the offensive line are, where it's like, oh, we lost an offensive lineman. We got another great one to come in. Like, there's not
That'd be a good question. Who has the deepest offensive line?
Who's got the best backup guards in the league? Like, it doesn't exist. There's not enough right now human beings coming out of college football that know how to play the position well to where we have a lot of teams that have two quality offensive linemen, three quality offensive linemen. The Cowboys were in a great position because they had four, maybe five.
Yes.
It's not because they had eight. This is a big deal. It's a really big deal for a team that we said, what's the path for the Cowboys to getting back to the playoffs? The best offensive line in football is the first thing we always say, and then Ezekiel Elliott. Now, Zeke's a special enough running back. He doesn't have to have a great offensive line to be effective, but it sure as hell helps.
Where they miss Travis Frederick, too, in the passing game is him getting out on the screen passes. Typically, the center is the guy to get out there, and he's a great athlete, very, very smart player. So Zeke can be affected and the passing game, but I believe he will be effective in the running game because the center's ability to be able to block at the line of scrimmage, and Travis can get up to that second level, and that's the reason why he's the best. It's not because he's the strongest, the fastest. He is a combination of all those things, and until he gets back in that lineup, until he gets back to full strength, because there's a thing with strength, weight loss involved in these issues that can be very, very troublesome for a professional football player, let alone just a regular person.
All right, let's get back to last night's game between the Browns and Eagles, a little Thursday night football. Carson Wentz did not play. Nick Foles did, sort of. Not the Nick Foles we came to know and love in last year's Super Bowl. This Nick Foles turned the ball over three times in the first half, was sacked three times, stripped for a fumble, and down for a safety. It was reported last night that Peterson was disappointed in Foles' performance. Peterson claims he was disappointed in the entire offense, not Foles specifically. Here is Nick Foles after the game.
I know that this game's a process and that I've played this game my whole life, and I haven't always played great games. There's times where these are the toughest ones where you just have to keep battling. It really shows you what you're made of deep inside. And I was going to keep firing it no matter what. I mean, I didn't want to throw any more picks, but I was going to throw another one. I was going to keep firing the ball. You can't play with fear. I didn't play as clean as I wanted to, but I know that knowing me, knowing this team, that we're going to learn from and move forward. There's a lot of great stuff to learn from this game. It's an emotional game. It's not fun playing the way I did. It really hurt us tonight, but I know that I can improve and I will improve.
CC, this is just the preseason, but how concerning was Foles' struggles last night?
And not concerned. That's why Nick Foles is not a starter, because he's not consistent. You guys asked me last year in the last quarter of the season, Nick Foles, man, you guys worry? This is who Nick Foles is. Backup quarterbacks, they're not as consistent. They don't throw the ball as much. They don't make as good of decisions. They will turn the ball over. They are prone to interceptions in bundles. That's who Nick Foles is. Nick Foles caught fire NFC Championship game against the Vikings. Great crowd support. Man, he had some receivers make some plays. He made some throws. And in the Super Bowl, where he dueled with Tom Brady. But Nick Foles was not great last season. Let's not forget what really happened. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised. But I do like Nick Foles' attitude that he realized this team, you know, needs to support the quarterback, and he can win even though he doesn't play great. And I like the fact that, because he wouldn't have been this way early in his career. I was getting ready to throw it. I'm going to throw it. I don't know if they're going to catch it, but I ain't want to throw another pick. But I like that part, because that's the part, because he knows that his players and the coaching staff, they have confidence. Most backups, They don't have confidence in him. So Nick Foles, no, I wasn't alarmed. No, I wasn't. I didn't leave the game disappointed. Did he make a couple mistakes with the football? I don't want my veteran quarterback to make. Yes, but this is the way backup quarterbacks, and this is the way Nick Foles will play. If he was a starter for Philadelphia, you can get used to 5 or 6 games just like this.
This is what I thought I was going to see when I said the Eagles can't win the Super Bowl. When Carson Wentz got knocked out, I thought they had a typical backup quarterback. I thought Nick Foles was going to be the guy he had been the last few years. And you can't beat good teams with quarterback play like that. They had a great defensive game in their first playoff game when Nick Foles didn't play this poorly, but played really poorly. And then what you're saying is absolutely right. Like, it was, we saw the moment it happened when he caught Alshon Jeffrey down the sideline in the NFC Championship game. And from that moment forward until he's hoisting the Super Bowl trophy, he played 7 quarters of football, unlike anything we'd seen from him. People say, oh, what about that 27 touchdown, 2 interception? No. It wasn't those types of throws. Yeah. That was a Chip Kelly offense.
Yep.
It was very different. It was an out-of-body experience for Nick Foles. Now, what impact does it have? It has an impact to me on a few things. One is, I don't think you can help but be less optimistic about the Eagles' chances in week one if Wentz isn't ready, because Nick Foles has not yet played well at any point in this preseason. Like, he got dinged and we thought he had a broken collarbone. Turned out he didn't. But the last game Nick Foles played well in was the Super Bowl. The other thing it does is, we've talked about if there's a quarterback injury, who's getting the phone calls. Well, I think the Jets will get phone calls for Teddy. The Colts might get phone calls for Jacoby Brissett. I think the Nick Foles trade market has cooled substantially for a team if there's a quarterback injury, based on where he was after the Super Bowl, where he is right now. But I maybe erroneously thought that Nick Foles had recaptured something. When you play that well on that stage, I think being confidence is a huge part of being a pro athlete. Nothing could imbue you with more confidence than winning Super Bowl MVP out-dueling Tom Brady. But he went right back to
Seen a lot of Super Bowl MVPs like Nick Foles who went right back to being normal.
Not at the quarterback position, though. You're right. We've seen Larry Brown. We've seen a lot of guys that were outlier MVPs on either defensive players. I totally agree. But we'd never seen quite this situation where it's the quarterback where he is out-dueling the greatest of all time. He's, you know, famous. Yeah.
Right. I don't know if he out-dueled Tom Brady. Tom did throw for 500.
Okay, so you're right. He was eye-to-eye with Tom Brady in that football game.
Yes.
And so you're right. Brady played great. But where Foles played that well on that stage against that opponent, and then in the preseason, we can't, by the way, say, oh, well, the Eagles didn't have all their guys. Like, Vitae didn't play well in that game. Myles Garrett ate his lunch. But Nick Foles, every game Nick Foles played last year was with Vitae. Like, the Eagles did what they did with backup players last season.
Were you concerned at all with the way the Eagles played and have been playing in the preseason?
I'm not concerned because their overall depth. They got a lot of good players. And their best player is not playing yet. Alshon Jeffries will also be added to that. So you add Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffries, to Jason Peters, left tackle. Oh, shoot, you've added some ball players. Like, no, I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned. I don't get concerned with veteran teams that struggle in the preseason because they're trying to accomplish a number of different things that younger teams aren't. Nick Foles has not looked well. Vitae, right tackle, has not looked well. So they've had some players in particular that have not looked well. But I believe that the Eagles will be ready week number one against the Falcons.
The concerning thing for the Eagles for the first 2 weeks of the preseason was the defense looked really shoddy. They allowed 31 points in the first preseason game. The Patriots scored 100 on them. Yesterday, the defense looked like the Super Bowl defense, but they, of course, offensively did the least you can do in a football game. They got shut out, and they got shut out by the Browns, and we don't think the Browns' strength is going to be the defense. To me, the most instructive part of yesterday's game was, and it wasn't just Nick Foles, but it was how much, I'm going to keep mentioning this player's name today, how much a great D-end can wreck a game plan. Myles Garrett was all over the backfield, and Vitae could do nothing with him. Now, Jason Peters is 37 years old. coming off a torn ACL. Like, he's also one of the great left tackles in this league. And so that is there some concern that if Jason Peters, either age or injury, that the Eagles don't have? We were talking about what teams have great backup offensive linemen. We thought the Eagles had a very quality swing tackle. I am less confident in that today than I was yesterday. So that part is at least moderately concerning to me as well.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, to Hugh Jackson make a mistake putting Tyrod back in the game? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Caney joining the show.
What up, man? Good to
see you. Chris.
Hey, Jenna, how you
doing?
How's
it going?
I'm good. Doing pretty good.
Awesome. All right, so the Cleveland Browns have been telling us all preseason that Tyrod Taylor is the team starter. So when Taylor fell, bent his wrist back, left the game, and then came back, people thought he'd be done for the night. He did return to finish out the first half, but never came back out to the sideline after halftime. Baker Mayfield did come in, sputtered with that first unit, only threw for 76 yards and a pick on the night. All right, Chris Caney, we're going to get to Baker in just a second. But first, what was your reaction to Tyrod coming back in the game after hurting his wrist?
Well, it felt like a player that wanted to get back out on the field. And I think Tyrod understands the inevitable that at some point, Baker Mayfield is going to replace him as the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, this is something that's obvious. When players are in the NFL and you see guys
drafted. Have you ever been in this position?
No, I've never been in this position. I never had a guy as a first-round pick drafted at my position. But guys understand it. If you've been around the National Football League for any period of time, you know that when they draft somebody with one of those high picks or your spot.
And you came in to take someone else's spot.
As a free agent, exactly. When they start signing guys in free agency or they use high draft picks on players, you know the inevitable that that guy is going to be at the top of the depth chart. It's like Vegas. Money plays. The Cleveland Browns have more invested in Baker Mayfield than they do Tyrod Taylor. So at some point, Tyrod is not going to be the starting quarterback. So he wants to take advantage of the opportunity while he has it so he can showcase his abilities, and hopefully he'll be able to get another job as a starting quarterback at one of the other 31 teams.
And the Browns have been very clear on their messaging. Tyrod's our starter. We want Tyrod to start the whole year. There is one easy for every team in the league exit ramp from whatever you've been messaging, and that's injury. Like, that isn't abandoning your plan. That isn't going different from what you've said. That isn't changing the message. It's injuries happen in this league. Guy got hurt, next man up, see how he plays. Now, that I saw him fall, and in real time, I thought he was seriously injured. I didn't think Tyrod would be able to put himself back into the game. It looked to me maybe the angle was odd, but I know Troy and Joe also thought when they showed coming back from break the replay that it looked like his wrist bent in a funny direction, that it wouldn't bend unless it was either dislocated or there was some type of fracture. But when you saw him he ran off the field, runs into the locker room, I assume, to get the x-ray. They find out he doesn't have a fracture, and then he's standing on the sideline with nothing on his arm. He looked like a guy who was thinking exactly that. No, no, no. The game plan was for me to get this many series. I mean, just because we're going to have to go back and forth, I'm still getting that many series, because we can't also look at this knowing Baker struggled. Like, Tyrod didn't know Baker was going to struggle. Baker didn't know he was going to struggle. It's a very different narrative if Tyrod gets dinged but is not injured moving forward, as is the case, and Baker continues what he had done up to this point in the preseason, which is play clean, effective football against backups, by the way, with an easier defensive front. So I totally get why Tyrod, not many starting quarterbacks would have to do this, but Tyrod's kind of the starter with an asterisk, which is why he, I think, had to do this.
But does Tyrod have the last say in whether he plays or not? Like, is there a little response? And I don't know, I'm just asking. Is there a responsibility by the team to say, we know Baker's not ready to start. We know Tyrod is our starter. I know the x-rays were negative, but I don't want to put him in a position where maybe there was a tear or something. Why don't we just shut him down for the night? It's not going to change our opinion or anything. Isn't that the responsibility of the team to maybe jump in and say,
well, first, when
we
he
get
got
it.
Injured, he went into the tent. Then he went into the locker room. In the locker room, they have every state-of-the-art piece of equipment. They have qualified doctors that they knew exactly when he came out of the locker room. Now, as a player, at that point, what is there an injury? No, there's not an injury. It's called a woo-woo. It's called being nicked. It's called everyday life in the NFL. So at that point, the training staff cleared him. So at that point, Tyrod and the coach probably had a conversation. He's like, how do you feel? He said, I feel good enough to go back in. And at that point, it's up to the player. if he can go in to be able to join his teammates, they are at work, and to be able to finish this preseason game. This is how you turn the culture around, by a guy playing when he doesn't have to play. All right, because we can't forget they've won one game in two seasons. Mm-hmm. Right. So if everyone took off when we had a little nick, all right, you can't develop some type of culture. And that's also the reason why yesterday when you talked about Josh Rosen, he hurt his thumb. Right? What'd you say, Nick?
That that's going to happen during a game, and he's going to have to play the very next play. That it's that in an odd way for him, that injury was actually a good thing because it gives him some experience of playing after he. How many times a year we see a guy bang his thumb on somebody's helmet? Like, that's a real thing.
Tyrod has no history with the Cleveland Browns and with the players.
Yeah.
You know how you develop history? You know how I trust you? See you in there.
Yep.
See you battling with me. That's how I develop trust, not just because you're on the team. So this is why you must have training camp. It's why you must have preseason games. And Tyrod did the professional thing by going back in there and joining his teammates and trying to continue being the starting quarterback for the Browns.
And CC, I think you make a point when you talk about guys trying to make themselves available even when they're working through nicks and bruises. That's good for the other 52 guys on the roster. But when you talk about the starting quarterback, that cat is a little bit different just because you recognize the hopes and dreams of the franchise. How you feed your family is based in part by how that guy performs. So you need to make sure that your starting quarterback is available. But, Nick, you said Tyrod is that quarterback with an asterisk, right? Just because you know that the number one overall pick is sitting behind him. So he becomes a little bit more expendable for the organization.
And he has a bigger sense of urgency. What you're talking about, Jenna, where the coaching staff says, listen, we know you're fine. We're going to let the backup play. I think for the vast majority of teams, I don't want to go through all of them now, but for the vast majority of teams, that's exactly what would happen. Like, there's Aaron Rodgers, for example, doesn't have anything to prove to his teammates, and he's the unquestioned starter. If he gets nicked at all, even if he goes in, oh, he's fine. Once he comes out of a preseason game, he's not going to go back in the preseason game. But Tyrod has, of all the quarterbacks in the league that have been declared the week one starter, his hold on the job is the most tenuous. He's the one with the biggest asset sitting behind him. Like, he's the one also that is newest to his team. Like, at least Josh McCown, for example, was with the Jets last year, and Darnold was the third pick. Tyrod wasn't with the Browns, and Baker was the first pick. And of all the rookie quarterbacks prior to last night, Baker's played the best. Mm. Like, I mean, Baker's played really well in this preseason. So for all those reasons, like, Tyrod doesn't want to be Wally Pipped here.
Not in the preseason. But when I got cut by Buddy Ryan, I went to Minnesota, and I was trying to learn the offense. They had Anthony Carter, Hassan Jones, both of them established wide receivers, Steve Jordan, a great tight end. About the third game of the season, we went to Philadelphia. Anthony Carter hurt his hamstring in warm-up. They said, Chris, are you ready to go? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Look it up. I think I went for like 160 on Monday night. Mm. And after that, it was a wrap for Anthony Carter. His career in Minnesota was totally marginalized. That was one of the worst days of his career. And that was the day that he happened to just get a little nick on his hamstring and couldn't go on a Monday night. So I don't like to be disingenuous on TV. And I never recommend something to another player that I wouldn't do. So I understand why Tyrod went back in there. I understand why he came out of the locker room. I understand why he grabbed his helmet, because his professional career is in the balance. And it's just so easy, and it's not really responsible. People say, you know, the coaches should have kept him out. No, Tyrod did the right thing for his career.
Well, and the people also, I think, when you're talking about Tyrod's career, even if you're watching saying Tyrod knows that he's not the starter in Cleveland next year, but that doesn't mean he's not the starter somewhere next year. Mm-hmm. And I overreacted things. I thought he broke his wrist. And so I saw it, and I thought, and I know I'm not the only one. I think Joe and Troy thought he was seriously injured. A lot of people thought he was seriously injured. In my head, I do the whole thing. And I'm like, man, Tyrod, not only is Baker now the starter here, but who's going to pay Tyrod to be their starter going into camp next year? Like, the whole trajectory could be different. Now, no matter how long he's the starter in Cleveland, he has the ability to show the other teams in the league, I can be a starter for you.
And I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, because Tyrod could have a great future as a part-time starter in Cleveland. He could win Dorsey and him over this. Say, you know something? We're not paying him that much money. Let's keep him here with Baker. Him and Baker have something together. And when you go out there and you play in preseason games like that, people in the front office, you can win those people over. Been saying, you know, man, let's keep him here. Like, he can be a foundational brick to getting this whole thing turned around in Cleveland. He don't have to go somewhere else. He could be right there as a foundational player, backing up Baker Mayfield once he becomes a starter and being a great support system for the Cleveland Browns and getting that culture change.
And, CeCe, I think he's well on his way to being able to help Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey do that. Just from watching the footage from Hard Knocks and seeing how everybody responds to him, you know, Tyrod Taylor is one of those consummate professionals, making sure he's the first one in the building and the last one to leave, trying to set the example for all of the young guys, trying to teach Baker Mayfield the process and what it means to go about your business as a quarterback, being able to understand the game plans, the playbook, week in, week out. Those types of things are tough for young guys to learn if somebody's not teaching them. But Tyrod has already shown a willingness to be that guy to show all of the young players that. And Hugh Jackson, he's earned his trust, and I think that's the biggest thing. When you start talking about your starting quarterback, that him and the head coach have to have that relationship where they trust each other, and I think that's why Hugh, in part, let him back in that game last night.
All right, Chris, thanks. Stick around. Coming up, could Deshaun Watson challenge for the MVP this season? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Chris Canty. You know, Canty, only one of us out here had the Texans winning the Super Bowl last year. I'm not naming names, and that was because of their dynamic quarterback, Deshaun Watson. No, it's because they were on Hard Knocks last year, and I think every team that's on Hard Knocks.
You fall in love with them
yep,
every time.
Yep, that's it. Sucker! Watson was outstanding before his ACL injury, ending his season last year, as was Carson Wentz, who was leading the Eagles to the league's best record before tearing ligaments in his knee. Both are looking to have bounce back years in 2018. But Chris, how hard is it to bounce back to form for these guys?
Well, it's going to be really hard. I think Deshaun Watson will have an easier road just because he has experience with that same injury. He had it in college. So you know what it is that second time around to go through the rehab and what it's going to take and the timeline to where you're going to start feeling like yourself. But you have to understand you're working with a new body. And so I think for Carson Wentz, that will be the biggest adjustment for him. And you can point to the clips that they showed of him working out in the pregame routine where he slipped and he stumbled a little bit with his footwork that he was working on, simulating being in the pocket and going through his progression. So I think there is a little bit of a learning curve when understanding how to deal with the rehab of this injury. And more so, it's the mental state that you're in, just making sure that you understand that it's not going to be an overnight result in terms of being able to be back to where you were when he injured that knee in Los Angeles back in December. So I think that both guys are in a good situation. Deshaun Watson has a good complement of skill position players that will be able to support him. When he returns, he'll be able to get the ball in those guys' hands, let them do the heavy lifting on the offensive end. And then Carson Wentz, of course, has Nick Foles, a Super Bowl MVP, as his backup. So there's no read to rush right there. If anything, the coaching staff is going to have to slow down Carson Wentz because he's going to be in a hurry to prove that he is one of those quarterbacks that merits MVP consideration, especially when your backup has that level of success.
Yeah, great observation. I think you saw some of the same things that I saw from last night, because I thought the video of Carson Wentz before the game that Troy Aikman and Joe Buckingham talked about was very impressive. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks work out, but I think that when we think about quarterback injuries, we don't think about Carson Wentz, how strong he is. Like, look how powerful his legs are. He's a mobile quarterback. He is a great athlete, not a good athlete. He's got a big-time arm, and his lead leg, not his back leg in his throwing motion, was the one that was injured. If it was his back leg, the one he was pushing off of, no, because your front leg in throwing the football just helps you more guide the ball. Your back leg helps you push off and go with
it. So you'd be more concerned about his ability to recover from this if it's his right leg?
Yes, it would be a little slower. Now, okay, we're still 9 months from inside of 9 months from when he did injure, which you said, Canty, in December. But he's a powerful athlete, and you can see that he's so far advanced in his workouts. The only thing that he hadn't had is just live bodies around his legs. But you can see with the cone drills that they were doing, with him anticipating being able to move in and out of the pocket, he is a great athlete. He's just not some nimble guy. He is not Teddy Bridgewater when he got hurt. He is not Sam Bradford when he got hurt.
He's not even RG3, who was a great athlete but didn't have the strength
throughout his body that Carson Wentz
now, so
has.
That's what I've seen with Carson Wentz. And watching video coming out of the Texans practice, I think Deshaun Watson's throwing motion has really gotten even quicker as far as releasing the football. People talk about his deep ball, lack of being accurate. He's proved that last year he can do that. Mm-hmm. Now, can he do that over a season? I believe both of their stats, which their touchdown to interception ratio, Nick and I have talked about this, it might not be as great as it was last year, but they could still have the MVP type of seasons because that's just the way it goes. When Aaron Rodgers was MVP, when he came back the next year, he threw more interceptions, but he was still on a level that you would consider him. You see that in Brady year in and year out.
Well, so that I think right there is the key. Bill Barnwell wrote a great article on this. He's one of, I think, the smartest football writers out there talking about, let's pretend these guys didn't get hurt. And say, where do we think they will regress from last year, right? So let's remove the knee injury entirely. What was the thing about Wentz I couldn't stop talking about last year? How amazing he was on third down. It was one of the best third down quarterbacking seasons we've seen in a decade. It was actually, according to Barnwell, one of the 10 best seasons. The other guys on the list, Brady's got a couple years, Manning, Rodgers, Breeze, every single one of those guys. The next year was much closer to league average on third down. In that regard, the water finds its level. So when he has a 123 rating on third downs, like, hurt or not, you can't duplicate that year after year. That's Carson Wentz. Now on Deshaun Watson. Watson had a remarkable season in this regard. He had the third highest interception rate in the NFL. Only Kaiser and Simeon were higher. And he still had these unbelievable numbers. Unbelievable because of the volume of touchdowns. Because receivers only dropped 1% of passes that he was throwing when the league average is about 4.
Right.
Those are areas where if he never hurt his knee, you are likely, it's hard to have that type of great season with that many interceptions. The last quarterback to do it, according to Barnwell, was Y.A. Tittle. That was in 1963. So there's reason to believe for both of these guys, statistically, they won't be the same, even if their bodies are as healthy as ever. And we know their bodies obviously aren't as healthy as ever.
I know Deshaun Watson was so fantastic coming out of college, but was last year too small of a sample size for you, CC, to know that he's going to be able to be this good or to be able to project? We saw so much more from Carson Wentz last season.
No, I believe Deshaun Watson is going to be a great football player. It's just a matter of when he hits. And I try to talk to Nick about the difference between the good players and the great ones. The great ones get to their peak earlier. They get to their prime earlier, and they hang in there longer. It's just a matter of when he gets there. And then once he gets there, how long can he stay there? Because I believe he is going to be one of the faces of the National Football League for the next 10 years. He is what we've wanted to see between Cam Newton and Michael Vick. That's who Deshaun Watson is. He is that new cat. And I believe he's going to dominate in the league for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you, CeCe. I think he wants to be great, and he's willing to put in the work. And you see his understanding of the NFL game. You don't usually see quarterbacks have that quick an ascent in terms of being able to grasp what the NFL game is all about and get acclimated to it. But, Nick, you said something about the statistical seasons of Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, and maybe they might regress back to league average. The one thing I will say, and I'm agreeing with you in that capacity, the one thing I will say is by both of those quarterbacks being on the field, you're going to see a difference in terms of how they impact their team winning. Oh. When Deshaun Watson was out there on the field last year, the Houston Texans averaged over 30 points a game. When he wasn't the starting 13. Quarterback, it was less than 20. Yeah. So you see that. And, of course, with the Philadelphia Eagles and Carson Wentz, they were the best team in football. Now, I understand that Nick Foles went 5-1 as the starter once he got hurt and they won the Super Bowl, but it's a different team.
They weren't the same team.
It's a different team. Listen, that Atlanta Falcons game in the divisional round in Philadelphia is not as close if Carson Wentz is the starting quarterback. So I look at that and I say maybe he might not have the same statistical season, but Carson Wentz, when he's there, their team is going to have, it's going to be the same impact on winning.
He made them coaches a lot better, too.
He sure did. Got them coaches a lot richer, too.
Yeah. Chris, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up on the other side, Ice Cube and Clyde Drexler join the show next. First things first. Don't miss the Big Three Championship live on Fox. Chris Anderson and Power will meet Drew Gooden and Three's Company on the half court in Brooklyn to battle for the Julius Erving Championship trophy. You can catch all the action live tonight starting at 8 Eastern on Fox or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. And who better to talk to than Big Three founder Ice Cube and the Commissioner and Hall of Famer Clyde Drexler. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Hey, I think this is the first time we've had two guys on our set.
Congrats.
Right?
Congrats on a successful season number two.
Yes.
And Clyde, good. Look, man, I haven't seen you in just a little bit. Man, you still look at five Slamma Jamma
time.
Man, you look good.
Look so deceiving.
No.
I feel good, though. You're only as good as you feel. You know that.
Well, good.
Well, let's start by talking about tonight's game. Game plan a little bit for me. How excited for you to see the culmination of this entire season come together?
I mean, very excited. You know, the games have been great. Guys have been, you know, putting it all on the line. Very competitive, fiery. And you got two great teams going at it. You know, Power is the number one seed, led by Nancy Lieberman. So she can win a championship tonight, which would be great for a lot of different reasons. But also Michael Cooper got a great team in Three's Company, and he can make history tonight by winning a championship in four different leagues.
You know, we follow Big Three. I've been to a few of the venues, the crowd turnout, the support, and the whole event of how you entertain the people from the time they come in. I know you strategically have picked some of these cities around the U.S. How important was it for you to be able to bring a championship like that back to a place like Brooklyn and New York and how basketball means so much?
I mean, you know, Brooklyn set us off. You know, they set us off right. Last season, our first game was here, and they showed out, showed up, and had a good time. And this was us getting our feet wet. And so we are very appreciative of that. So when we was planning this year, we was like, we got to go back to a few places. Dallas was one, and we're going to take them a playoff game, but we got to go back to Brooklyn with the championship and reward the city who helped us, you know, set it off.
Launch the product.
Without a doubt.
And Clyde, what about just the basketball culture in New York City? Like, famously, I feel like for a long time, every great point guard was out of New York City. Before there was a stadium in Brooklyn, it's just Madison Square Garden, the Mecca. Playing in New York City as a player, what's that like? How's it different from maybe some other cities?
Well, New York is the bastion of basketball because of the press. But also, the fans love the game. They're very knowledgeable. The point guard legacy of guys coming from New York, Kenny Smith to tell you all about that,
yes.
Right? But they've always had a great history. Nancy Lieberman from New York grew up playing in the Rutgers League along with Julius Erving, who's also in the Big Three. And so New York kind of intertwines the history of actually basketball from the beginning.
You mentioned Nancy Lieberman, and I know it was strategic when you decided what type of coaches that you were going to put out there, because you could put a lot of men out there. Nancy Lieberman, her and Cheryl Miller, you would argue the greatest basketball players ever. They used to call her the female Jordan. How much of a boost has she been in partnering with the Big Three and her team getting to the championship?
I mean, she's a great coach. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, great communicator. And we saw her last year. She was assistant coach for Rick Barry's squad, the Ball Hogs, and outcoached him that day. And so so we was like, yo, when Clyde took the commissioner job and vacated the Power coaching job, we were like, yo, Nancy knows the league. She was into it. Let's see if she's down to do it. And her accepting the job was great for us.
And you guys have had her mic'd up almost every game. Man, her basketball knowledge is amazing. Her sets that she runs.
Yeah. I call her the basketball whisperer because she knows how to communicate and get the best out of those guys. And, you know, communication is a lot, you know, a lot of coaching is communicating with people and getting them to play together.
You know, last time you were on the show, we asked you what you really wanted to see this year that you didn't have last year, and you said you wanted these games to be live, and they were. I mean, we talk about it, we promote it, and it's fun and it's exciting. Do you have a goal for next year, what you want to see in the next in the next season?
I think we could do more shoulder programming, you know, inside the big three, you know, things that can get you kind of hyped up for the week. You know, now we play on Fridays, and then Monday we got to kind of re-crank it and get the promotion machine going to get ready for the next Friday. But if we had shoulder programming and had, you know, shows on that kind of just broke down the week, broke down the matchups, you know, kind of, you know, to get keep people interested.
We got a guy on our staff named Deontay that's been itching for a show and thinks he knows basketball. So I'm sure he's going to want to talk to you after
this. Let's talk to him.
Clyde.
You got the right guy here.
Clyde, I got to ask you a question, though. Last year you were the coach of power, right? Okay. All right. So, I mean, you build it. And now that Nancy Lieberman should get to coach of the year, she's going to get potentially a championship ring. How much? Come on, tell us. You set the foundation for the team that's right now been the best team in the league.
Loosen the jar she opened.
Absolutely,
it.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to give her a team where guys were gentlemen and that they would respect and actually compete.
Yeah.
And so Corey Maggette is the captain of power.
It's your league
MVP. He is a big part of that because he picked up Glenn Big Baby Davis in the offseason. Chris Birdman Anderson, Quentin Richardson, Xavier Silas. And so with Katino Mobley, those guys are deep and talented. So Nancy inherited a very nice team.
And if people didn't see the semifinal game, I mean, Power's been the best team in the league throughout the year. In the semifinal, they were playing, oh, God, it was the
Tri-State.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 49-49. Big Baby's going for a game winner. Yeah. And this was park rules, man. No layups.
No layups.
I mean, I thought he was going to be. And also, people don't know the rules. Free throws there, one to get two. You got to win by two. So Big Baby, who can at times be a shaky at the line, he's shooting to win, you know, gain, to walk off free throw. That had to be for you guys as exciting of a finish as you could have hoped for your semifinal game.
I beg for that kind of finish. They asked me before the playoffs, what are you hoping for? I said, man, I hope it's 48-48. Somebody call a timeout, and we don't know what's going to happen after that. And it really went down to that. It was 49-49. It was timeout called, ball out of bounds, and there was a, you know, just steal by Quentin Richardson that, you know, basically sent them to the finals.
Yeah, we have two games tonight to finish up year number two. You and I talked about how phenomenal year number one was. Not that you were surprised, but the momentum that you were able to create, not only in the United States, but around the world in their interest in Big Three. We're going to have a great consolation game, championship game tonight. Year number three.
Yes.
What does Ice Cube want to do in year number three?
Well, it's really up to, you know, our broadcaster, Fox, on, you know, how do they want to help us grow
the
sport.
What you need? Shanks and them are watching. What you need?
They know what we need. You know what I mean? It's definitely not a secret. You know, we want to grow the sport, and we want a partner that's going to, you know, do the things that we need to do to grow the sport for the next 5 years. So, you know, this the plan that we go into in the offseason will be the plan that sets us up and, you know, really, you know, can hopefully get this league to where it needs to be.
Clyde, you wish you had something like this kind of league back when you were playing?
That's a good question. I would love it because I would have lit those guys up.
I love what's Big the Three ideal three-on-three team then? Guys from your era, forget
guys
today's era.
Give me
your team. Oh. You're one of them.
Well, you need a shot blocker. You always need a rim protector.
Mm-hmm.
So give me Hakeem Olajuwon.
Okay.
Well, you need a guy who can create off the dribble. I'll take Michael Jordan.
Oh. I thought you were going to go with all five slam-a-jamma guys. I was like, we got Clyde. We got Hakeem. Okay, Jordan's a pretty decent.
Right, let's transfer to this era. I know you, Ice, you and I have talked about it. The dream guy, Kobe Bean Bryant.
Yesterday
Kobe
was his
turned
birthday.
40. Yes.
Yeah.
Kobe Bean Bryant. What's the potential of Kobe joining your league?
It's great potential because, you know, as long as we continue to grow the league and go in the right direction, have competitive games, you never know. Juices could get flowing, and he might get the itch, and we got the scratch. And the thing is this, you know, a lot of players have told us, yeah, and they didn't play.
Okay.
And a lot of guys have told us no, but when February come around, they're asking for a contract. So we don't rule out nobody until we cross the deadline.
Ice, I know Kobe's your guy. I know he's probably your favorite player. After Magic, your favorite player ever.
Mm-hmm.
You're going about this all the wrong way.
The way to get Kobe to play is to look into the camera and say, Kobe, what are you, scared? You too old? You can't handle it? Kobe, you think Baron Davis going to D you up? You got to challenge him. That's the best. You can't.
That was in your former life. You used to do that. Keep it business right now.
No. That's my DEFCON 4. That's my DEFCON 4 plan. You know what I'm saying? I'm going back. I'm going by it the diplomatic way right now.
Or tell him he'll be able to go up against Smush Parker every single week in the league, and maybe he'll come in.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out.
Delighted to have
us. We'll all be watching the Big Three tonight on Fox. Coming up, Nick says Tim Duncan is better than Kobe Bryant.
Well, I mean, it's
somebody at this desk might disagree.
Whoa.
I just disagree. What
I mean,
can
it's
I
just
tell
obvious.
You? Next up, first things first.
I mean, that's not.
Back here, first things first, with Ice Cube. Thanks for staying around.
Oh, man, thanks for keeping
out, man.
Thanks for keeping me.
Our statistician on the show here made sure we all knew today was Kobe Day. 8/24, August 24th. His name is Dusty. He's wearing a weird shirt. Some Kobe fans have been pretty vocal lately about LeBron joining the Lakers. Last week, Lakers owner Jeannie Buss said those folks weren't Laker fans if they're not happy about LeBron joining the team. All right, Ice Cube, what'd you make of her comments?
I agree. I mean, you got to let bygones be bygones. Part of the family now. You know what I mean? What are we tripping on? I mean, Kobe, the Kobe era is over. There's nothing LeBron can do that can touch that. Just like Kobe can't touch Magic. Just like Magic can't touch Kareem. Just like Kareem can't touch Wilt. Just like Wilt can't touch
Mikan.
Yeah, and Jerry West. So once you become a Laker and you do what you're supposed to do in a Laker uniform, you are cemented. There's nothing's going to uproot that.
Well, you might be the president unofficially of Laker Nation. You need to talk to some of these, what some folks call these Kobestani radicals. These folks, they don't want, they are angry about the best player in the league joining the Lakers.
Why?
Because of some, I think, fictitious rivalry between LeBron and Kobe. Like, they're not quite the same era. They never played each other in the finals. But there is, like, the fans have a bigger rivalry than the players ever did.
Yeah, I don't understand. You know, I think these two different players that never really went at each other in the finals. I mean, the closest they've gotten to each other was crazy puppet commercials they used to do for Nike. So, what's the problem? You know, both players are great in their own right. Both players did what they're supposed to do, and I don't understand the issue.
Have you met with LeBron since he's been in L.A. yet?
No.
But you plan on?
I don't know. I don't really. I like being a fan, man. I like.
But you have relationships with all of them, though.
Yeah, but
you've been doing this.
But I keep it at
it happens organically.
I keep it at a distance.
Oh, and why is that?
Because I want to be a fan.
So you want to be able to say whatever you want to say?
I want to be a fan. I don't, you know, I'm in all these industries. I'm behind the scenes on all these industries. And when it comes to the NBA and the NFL, I don't want to be. I just want to be just like, you know, the guy sitting in row 12. I just want to be a fan.
Was it a full, Ice Cube, was it a full embrace of LeBron when you heard he was coming? Or was there a small party that was like, I wonder how he was going to feel and look and be in a Lakers uniform?
I couldn't believe it. First of all, you know, when you hear that rumor, you want to put it out your mind. I heard the rumors about Shaq. You put it out your mind because if it don't happen, you don't want to be, you know, disappointed on that level. So I just didn't believe it was going to happen until it happened, but I'm happy.
How good?
I mean, who wouldn't be?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. How good do you think the Lakers can be this year?
I think the Lakers can make it. You know, I think they won 35 games last year. They should be able to add 10 to 15 more with LeBron, so that's pretty good.
Because 10 wins, they probably that's fringe of the playoffs. There's a lot of folks that think the Lakers are going to struggle to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think it's crazy. I think they would have been around a 500 team had they not added LeBron. So I think they're going to be closer to the 50s. Take Golden State out of it. Is there any other team in the West that you think the Lakers couldn't beat in a series?
No, I think they could beat anybody. The Warriors is deep.
You got a special team.
And they're going to have to build up and figure out how to beat that team. But I think, you know, you could suit up against pretty much any team in the league and have a shot.
There's tremendous excitement for sports in Los Angeles.
Yes.
People sometimes, they bang on Los Angeles as not a great town. But it is when the teams are great, L.A. is a great place to play. You got the Rams. They're booming. They got a talented roster. Great young coach. How excited are you and people in Los Angeles to go to see LeBron play?
Oh, man, extremely excited.
And how long has it been since that type of excitement was there?
I think that type of excitement was there. You know, the Shaq and Kobe years, that excitement was there. But even Powell and Kobe going to the finals brought a lot of excitement. But having every team in the mix, you know, now the Dodgers are good. You know, they went to the World Series last year. And then you have the Rams coming in and doing what they supposed to do, because if they wasn't making noise, they'd be in trouble, you know what I mean?
But we talk about your other team, that $100 million coach?
Oh, the Raiders.
Yes, what about that?
I don't know. What's going on over there?
Man, how can you not talk to Khalil Mack?
I don't understand that. How can you get rid of the great punter? I mean, we had a I don't really even know punters. You know, yeah. I know Ray Guy and the punter we had.
Marquette King,
who had swag and who did his job. Because he could pin him into behind the 20, and they got rid of him. So I don't know what the hell going on.
Hold, just real one other football thing, and then we can argue about Kobe and Duncan. You were mentioning all these teams in L.A.
Yeah.
You left one out. I feel like it was on purpose. What's your beef with the Chargers, man?
I mean, what's the like about the Chargers? Oh, my God. It's like having a cousin come move in, you know, you stay over and not go home. You know, it's like
when you leave, man.
Where you live with us now.
I've never heard of Charger hate. Like, I know Raider fans got beef with the Broncos. Raider fans sometimes got beef with the team I root for, the Chiefs. Where did this Charger beef come from?
Because they moved to L.A. We wouldn't even think about the Chargers.
It's a big city.
It ain't that big. I mean, to have enemies move in. I mean, it's a Ram Raider town. Really a Raider Ram town.
So all your family members know you can come over, you can get a meal, maybe something to drink, but you got to go. You can't stay all.
I mean, you can stay one night. Okay. Stay one night, maybe. But you got to go. You ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here.
Your dislike of the Chargers is such a random.
I got hate for the Clippers too.
For good.
Why?
Because they the Clippers.
But then why
they funked up the Staples Center and made us bad.
So they took the juju.
Yeah, man, they took our mojo, left the locker rooms funky, and that's why the Lakers are losing, because the Clippers are in the Staples Center. Okay.
So y'all had to get the king to come in to break the curse.
Hopefully they move them dudes. Take them to Seattle. Here's my beef.
Yeah.
The fact that it's so many cities that are dying to have a basketball team. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And we have one we don't need.
Hey, man, there was a while there where the Clippers were the only reason there was an L.A. team in the playoffs.
That was just...
What?
It was just...
Lob City.
Yeah, but it didn't amount to nothing. It didn't amount to nothing. It was just a bunch of hype.
So what would your conversation to Kawhi Leonard be next summer when he decides
he's
to
debating
leave
between
Lakers
Clippers
and Bucks? I mean, you saw what happened to Chris Paul when he had to go to the Clippers.
What happened to him?
It was terrible. Nothing happened.
If you could pick any, a bunch of guys are free agents next year. Kawhi's obviously the one that most tied to come to the Lakers and LeBron. If you could pick any of them to come join LeBron.
It's Kawhi, and then, you know, maybe KD would come.
All three?
Okay.
That little
Why
game,
not?
The game we saw at UCLA the other day.
And talking about the NBA and the role that Big Three, you and I were talking about Summer League. But, man, you've been a huge sports fan, a basketball fan for a long, long time. Is this the most popular, like, that we have seen basketball as far as a national interest since we've been adults?
I think so. You know, I think, you know, somehow the NBA has really been able to crack a year-round interest. Yeah, you know, where other sports, they go dark, and you can feel it when they go dark because you don't really hear about them. But the NBA, you know, the last 3 to 4 years have really figured out how to make this a year-round thing. And then you add the Big Three in there and, you know, these other leagues that's jumping off. Mm-hmm. It's just great. to have basketball in the summer like this.
All right, so it is evidently Kobe Bryant Day. I didn't know such thing existed, but 824, those are his two numbers.
Man, like you sound like you got a little salt, man.
No, yeah, for real. No, there's no salt for no reason. I'm just truth teller on this stuff. So I just explain this okay. to me because you know
You're
how much you know how much I respect your opinion. So
yeah.
like, so you got two guys, Kobe and Duncan, same era, both same team for their entire careers. They got the same number of rings, but Duncan's got more MVPs. He's got more Finals MVPs. He's best player on a champion four times. Kobe's best player on a champion twice. Duncan never played with a guy quite like prime Shaquille O'Neal. So explain to me how Kobe was better. I just don't think.
Kobe, to me, is just, if I was starting a team and it was Tim Duncan standing there and it was Kobe Bryant, I would take Kobe Bryant 100% of the time because he's the kind of athlete that you want to root for, to me. He's the kind of athlete that encompasses what a hero is to me. You know, a guy that comes in and does his job and has no sympathy for anybody else on the court. To me, that's the kind of guys I like to see play. So it's a personal thing. Yours, numbers, all that. You know, I think Kobe had a lot of hate in the league. You know what I'm saying? On why, you know, Shaq only got one MVP, which is ridiculous. You know, Shaq and Kobe with only one. And it's pretty ridiculous. So, you know, those are politics of the league. Still wouldn't trade Kobe for nothing in the world.
Thank Love you. It.
All right.
Thank Appreciate you.
Yeah.
I know I'm in
Thank
the next
you.
Friday movie. If we need to beat up someone,
oh,
if we need
guy?
A character, yeah. We're going to have a
Ain't
role.
Ain't nobody taking my chain, man. I've seen that before.
I know. Y'all might have to fight Tiny Lister for that role.
Thank you so much for being with us. We will all be watching the Victory Championship tonight on Fox. More First Things First right after this. Hey. Back here on First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Kane joins
that?
Us again.
My man,
Greg. He was doing a fraternity dance.
It caught me off guard.
You didn't.
It caught me off guard. I didn't know what
was
happening.
He was stepping out here.
Yeah, right. Staff and everything. Just keep them on they feet.
Okay.
We should do a second show just on things that happen in commercial
During
breaks.
During the break?
The outtakes?
It would have to be on YouTube. I don't think it's for broadcast air. The L.A. Rams have been moving through the preseason under the radar. That will happen when your quarterback and your star running back don't play. Neither have played at all. Rams take on the Texans on Saturday, and Todd Gurley won't be suiting up again and probably won't be suiting up until the season starts. According to Gurley, this doesn't bother him at all.
That is everyone's dream is not to play in the preseason. What are you talking about? I mean, you know, some guys is different. Obviously, you know, at the end of the day, it's always going to be different between playing in the preseason and playing in the regular season. But, I'm kind of happy not to be playing in it. But, you know, it's definitely good for some guys as well, too. Some guys just like being out there to, you know, just to get a feel for it and to see. So, but not this guy.
All right, Kenny, how big of a deal is it to miss preseason when you're already an established guy?
I don't think it's a big deal. And we saw that last year with Le'Veon Bell. He missed the majority of all of the preseason, and he came back for the first week of the regular season. Now, it took him a while to get going, two or three games, before we saw the Le'Veon Bell that we're used to. But over the span of the entire season, Le'Veon Bell finished second in total yards from scrimmage, only to Todd Gurley. So I don't think it's going to be a big issue for Todd. And when you look at what the Rams just did, investing all that money in him in a long-term contract, they want to make sure that they keep some hips off him because they need to keep him around as long as possible so they can have their backfield intact while they try to make a run at competing for a championship.
And when you said L. Bell got off to a slow start, that's accurate, but it's also true that his preseason was different than what Gurley's doing because he wasn't at training camp either. So at least Gurley's going through the practices, going through the meetings, all of that. So I don't think you have as much worry with him. I think Jared Goff not playing is odd. And, like, Todd Gurley's an established star in this league, right? Like, I don't think Jared Goff is that yet. Like, Jared Goff played 2 years. His first season was really bad for anybody, but he's a rookie. His second season was pretty good with a lot of great pieces around him, including the best running back in the league last year, Todd Gurley. Like, the having Jared Goff on, though, maybe he doesn't need the preseason game plan. That one is surprising to me, much more so than Gurley.
We've been debating this for years. Should guys play in the preseason? How many games should they play? How many should the team play? Should the league outrule? overrule and take the preseason games totally out of it. Football is a game that you get better at by playing. And Todd Gurley, it's not every football player's dream that they would miss all the training camp and all the preseason. He's just talking from himself. From a running back standpoint, I would say that is the position that is the least important as far as playing in the preseason, because the overall skill set, the ability to build a running football, and being able to replace that top level of productivity. If that guy gets hurt, it's going to go down. Besides the quarterback, they're very, very vital to an offense and to a team. But you can't play football without training camp. You mentioned L. Bell. We're not talking, Todd Gurley's not missing training camp. He's just not playing in the games. Yep. There's a difference. Todd Gurley will be ready for the regular season compared to the way L. Bell was last year, where he had that slow start. For me, I prefer to be able to play in a couple preseason games because I like to play football when I'm tired. And unless I'm getting joint practices, which I like to have two of those, training camp's a lot shorter. So as my team, I like to have two joint practices with two different organizations within that six-week period of time. And then I wouldn't have to play in the preseason game because I know the level of competition on those days, Chris, would be jacked up close to, like, game speed. But
yeah, and it's still a controlled environment, too, because it's practice. You're not taking anybody to the ground.
So if I had a couple of those, I wouldn't be as concerned as some of the skilled guys, running backs and quarterbacks playing. Whatever the organization decides to do with Jared Goff, as long as they just stay in unison as far as moving forward, I can only support them as long as they just stay consistent. Like, if he's not going to play for some type of reason, they don't have to share that with me. But as long as him, the coach, and the organization are on the same page, Nick.
How much harder, let me ask you from a receiver perspective real quick, does Brandon Cooks making an instant impact become without having game action with Jared Goff? Because he's the big free agent or the big trade acquisition, big receiver. Goff, last year, if he struggled with anything, it was on the deep ball, which is one of the things Cooks excels at, among other things. Does, as a receiver, if you had a new quarterback or you were new to a quarterback, would it put you in a rough spot having your first game ever played with him be week one of the regular season?
From passing and throwing the football, you can simulate game speed in practice. Because the wide receivers and DBs pretty much go 100% at each other. They're just going to say, we're just not going to go to the ground. So it's a lot easier to simulate that physical because it's not going to be as taxing as the big guys. Down in the trenches, they can only go so many reps at being live. So they have, through OTAs, mini camps, and all of training camp, they have thousands of reps together. So it's not as big as a jump them playing in week number one for the first time.
Is there a component to what this does in the locker room when you have a veteran or even a guy that's not a veteran, like a guy like Jared Goff, when he doesn't play through the preseason? Is there anything to that?
I don't think so, because Sean McVay has earned the trust of his players, and you see the jump that Jared Goff made from year one to year two. So I think all of the players in the locker room can get on board with whatever plan they devise for Jared Goff and Todd Gurley. And CC, to echo one of the points that you just made about simulating game speed and practice, you got to keep in mind, Nick, that there's a big difference between preseason game speed and regular season game speed. Regular season game speed is a whole different level than what you're doing in practice or in a preseason game. So I don't know if it's a big deal missing preseason games and Jared Goff not participating in that.
When you have game experience.
I think the big thing for Jared Goff is just making sure that he and Sean McVay are on the same page in terms of what they want to do and making sure that the practice tempo is something where they can get their work done.
And we must realize, too, from a defensive standpoint, a lot of their veteran players, they have not played them also. Their cornerbacks, they have been spotting guys when they're going to bring them back. So as an organization, the question you ask is a very good question. It's up to the coach to set the tone. He lets the team know what we're going to do. Instead of having groups whisper and you start getting these little clicks and everything, Sean McVay get in front of the team and be like, listen, Gurley's not playing. Talib's not playing. Goff's not playing. Sure. Yeah, Marcus Peters is not playing. And then everyone knows how we're going to do this moving forward. Even though we're on the same team, there's a different set of rules for each individual.
And that's where McVay's critical. Because if you don't have – if the players don't respect the coach, that can go sideways quick.
Yes.
So hold up. Wait, let me just make this clear. Not only does Todd Gurley play by different rules when it comes to contracts, he got 2 years left and got a brand new deal. He also don't have to do preseason games. He maybe, again, keep in mind if the players and the coach are sideways on this, they see that interview. They're like, You're right, it is everybody's dream not to play in these damn games, but we got to. You don't. You're the richest one of all of us.
Like, and I know there's a guy like Ndamukong Suh. You have to make sure that message goes to him the right
way.
Yes, sir. He's an established veteran, right?
He's an established veteran, but he's on a one-year contract. And Ndamukong Suh knows if you win at the highest level, everybody get paid. A high tide raises all boats. And when you recognize Todd Gurley's impact on that team's success, then as a veteran guy, you can go along with Sean McVay in whatever plan that he devises for preseason playtime.
No doubt. And number of years in the league notwithstanding, Gurley was the best player on this team last year. You can make the argument he was the best player that's not a quarterback in the whole league last year.
Yeah, best player on the team? You got to slow that down.
Oh, Aaron Donald.
Yeah,
okay,
easy
sure.
now.
Well,
easy
I'm glad
now.
You mentioned Aaron Donald
okay.
because this is an interesting test case league-wide because they're not holding Aaron Donald out. He's holding himself out. But so you got your best defensive player. He's not getting a rep of anything, right? You got your best offensive player. He's not playing the preseason games. Your quarterback might not play in the preseason games because of an odd scheduling thing where their week two preseason opponent is their week one regular season opponent. No starters played any of their week two preseason
games. Yeah, and a lot of times because sometimes you sign those preseason games for 4 years, 2 to 4 year cycles, so you don't know what the NFL schedule is going to be. So now it matched up where now they're playing a team in the regular season.
Which is obviously not ideal. Gruden complained about it. McVay took it in stride. I'll let people read into that however they want. But the point that I'm making is the Rams are going to be something of a test case of, all right, so maybe do we need 4 preseason games or could we have fewer preseason games, do more of those joint practices? Maybe you talk about a lot how important the preseason is. Wait, are you talking about those 4 games or the entire process of it?
Training camp experience. You cannot play football. Now, Todd Gurley and this younger generation, I'm not going to take advice from them. You cannot use Todd Gurley and say, oh, yeah, that's every player's dream. No. The product that we see in September in the NFL, it suffers because of the lack of practice. So you got to adjust your eye. These games start getting better around October because the quality of football, because the preseason in the NFL now is week number 1 through 3.
Yeah, I mean, players have to fight human nature because training camp doesn't feel good. I mean, when they had 2-a-days and you were actually hitting all day, every day. I mean, when I started training camp with Bill Parcells, it was 2 practices for 10 straight days in full gear. So you don't want to do that. But it's up to the coach to make sure that he asks his players to do what it takes in terms of being able to have the success that they want to have when it comes to the regular season.
Just real quick, when you say when you started, tell everyone what year that was.
That was 2005.
Okay, the reason I bring that up, that's not that long ago. Not that long ago, you had 10 straight days.
10 straight 2-a-days full gear.
10 straight 2-a-days. That, the way the league is, the new CBA and the way it's run now, that feels like it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It was not. So that, I mean, that is to C's point about why it takes the league as a whole a little extra time to get up and running into October.
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, how worried should the Eagles be about Nick Foles' struggles last night? That's next. This is First Things First. Nice game between the Browns and the Eagles. Carson Wentz did not play. Nick Foles did play, sort of. It was not the Nick Foles we came to know and love in last year's Super Bowl. This Nick Foles turned the ball over 3 times in the first half, sacked 3 times, stripped for a fumble, down for a safety. It was reported last night that Peterson was disappointed in Foles' performance. He claims he was disappointed in the entire offense, not just Foles specifically. Here is Nick Foles after the game.
I know that this game's a process and that I've played this game my whole life, and I haven't always played great games. There's times where these are the toughest ones where you just have to keep battling. It really shows you what you're made of deep inside. And I was going to keep firing it no matter what. I mean, I didn't want to throw any more picks, but as I was going to throw another one, I was going to keep firing the ball. You can't play with fear. I didn't play as clean as I wanted to, but I know that knowing me, knowing this team, that we're going to learn from and move forward. There's a lot of great stuff to learn from this game. It's an emotional game. It's not fun playing the way I did. It really hurt us tonight, but I know that I can improve and I will improve.
All right, Chris, you believe what he's saying there. He did want to go out, and he had all great intentions to go out and be that guy. He admitted that he struggled a little bit. How big of a deal is it that he did struggle?
Well, I don't think it's a big deal from the standpoint of that particular game because the offense didn't play well. And Doug Peterson is right to have a beef with that group. Mm-hmm. There's 6 possessions in the first half. You had a turnover on downs. You had a safety, a sack fumble, interception, Matt Jones fumble, then an interception to end the half. So, I mean, that's your 6 possessions with your first team group. And I think the offense struggled. by and large, because of the offensive line. Those guys got whipped up front by the Cleveland Browns defensive front. Miles Garrett, he must be a fan of the show, CeCe, because he showed up yesterday after Nick challenged him, and he had those two sacks, and, of course, he was the guy that came up on that fumble, I mean, on the safety. So, I mean, listen, the Cleveland Browns, I didn't think they were far off from a defensive standpoint, and I think they went out there and they proved that last night. But if you're that Philadelphia Eagles offense, you wanted to have a little bit better performance because you want to have that confidence rolling into week one, knowing that Nick Foles is most likely going to be your quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know what the offense is going to look like in week number one when they played Atlanta Falcons on that Thursday night to open up the 99th season in the NFL, because the last couple weeks against New England and then against the Browns offensively, they didn't look well. Doug Peterson has reason to be disappointed, not only with Nick Foles, but the rest of that offense. You make a critical point as far as that offensive line. When Doug Peterson calls certain plays, he's dependent on certain things. And last night when they were backed up to the goal line, the one reason why he calls that pass protection is because he believes in a veteran quarterback. They ran a play action where he is going to turn his back to the line of scrimmage, put the ball into the running back, and they are expecting him to have the appropriate footwork that he would be able to spin around and find a guy down the field because that's the best protection. Well, what does Nick Foles do? He trips over his own self. They get a sack and a safety. So Doug Peterson, he couldn't have been pleased about that because the only reason, because a lot of fans would be like, why'd you throw the ball there? The reason why he throws the ball is because he has a backup, because he has a backup veteran quarterback who he can depend on. On this interception, they have one high safety. They're in cover one. Nick Foles can't step into his throw because the center gets blasted into his lap. So not only the quarterback gives the safety of indicator over to his left to throw the interception. So Doug Peterson, he has ample in the film study. They'll be able to go back and realize this is not championship caliber football. So I can understand why Doug would be upset after last night's performance.
The safety, it's interesting because you're saying fans would be like, why'd you throw the ball? Even though he got safetied, he, in real time, got up and completed the pass.
Yes.
I mean, if he doesn't fall, if he could complete the pass after falling, taking the time, fall down, get up, it was going to be there. He just tripped himself. Every one of those other plays we just showed, which were the two interceptions and the fumble, it is obvious on the fumble, but even the interceptions, I mean, he is running for his life, or he is about to be running for his life. One, you said the center got pushed into him. Another one looked very similar.
He got flushed out of pocket to his left.
Right, and that looked very similar to a rookie quarterback we just saw on fourth down in an earlier preseason game, trying to make a play on fourth down when he got flushed out to his left, like where you're trying to make a play and it doesn't
work
out. Josh Allen, exactly right. Thank you. And so it was, they were all under duress plays, and see, why, other than home field advantage, why did you have so much more faith in the Eagles even after Wentz than I did?
Their depth on the offensive line.
You kept saying they're big people.
Man,
they got better big people than you got big people.
Got
offensive and defensive line, you just kept talking about they're big people. And the defensive line, I mean, did its job. We're talking about the Browns defense because they held Philly to 0 points. Or Eagles to 0 points. How about the Browns? Not Philly or the Eagles, pardon me. But they... The idea that Cleveland only scored three themselves. The defense line did its job. The offensive line for both teams struggled mightily. Mm-hmm. That's a worry I have for Cleveland as well. The reason I'm not as worried about Philly is not just because Jason Peters wasn't there, but I think Myles Garrett's going to be a problem for everybody.
Overreact to this. He's going to beat up on a lot of people.
Yeah.
Don't overreact to the Eagles' problem of it. Maybe totally overreact to Myles Garrett. I don't even know if it is overreacting. Like, you said he could win Defensive Player of the Year 1 year. He could win the sack title this year. Like, I really think he is poised to have that type of year. We saw Bosa in year two.
Yes.
Not win the sack title, but almost win Defensive Player of the Year.
Right, and just like that, he missed a great part of that first month of the season like Miles did. So that's part of the baked-in Cleveland will win between six and eight games is that number one pick, not from 2018, but from 17.
Exactly, and to go along with what you guys are saying about Myles Garrett, the reason why I feel like his production from a sack standpoint is going to improve is just because there are going to be other complimentary rushers opposite of him. So you got to have guys like Gerard Avery, the young guy that Greg Williams loves, step up.
Yes.
He bull rushed Lane Johnson for a sack fumble last night. Those types of players, Larry Ogunjobi, another guy, defensive tackle, those guys are going to have to step up and be able to produce in one-on-one situations. But going back to Nick Foles' performance last night, the one thing I will say that I'm a little bit bothered with for a veteran quarterback is being able to have ball security, especially in the pocket. You got to protect against being able to get the ball strip sacked. This is the second week in a row. Remember, it happened against the New England Patriots. It was a sack fumble return to the house for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You can't have that happen. You can't have those types of swings. So better ball security, especially in the pocket. Even when things break down, the offensive line doesn't do their job, you can still hold on to the football and punt it away.
Yes. But last night, if nothing else, showed how much this team needs Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
I mean, they want him back. They need him back. It's not a guarantee he's back for week one, but it does show how much they do need him.
No, they do need Carson Wentz. He's a difference maker, but with the way that that offensive line played, I don't want to put Carson Wentz behind that right now. I'm going to wait for Jason Peters to come back and play in the regular season, and then it's a different group, and you still have some time. You don't have to rush Carson Wentz back out there just because Nick Foles, the things that we've seen in the preseason, I have the confidence that he'll get those things cleaned up just because the Eagles have such a strong supporting cast and he is a veteran quarterback with experience.
Let me ask you one more Nick Foles question. Before the preseason started, before training camp started, I thought that if there was a quarterback injury, the first team that would be called would be Philly. I now feel if there's a quarterback injury, all right, I might be calling the Jets about Teddy. I might be calling the Colts about Jacoby Brissett before I would call Philly about Nick Foles. Am I overreacting, or do you feel similarly?
I think that's a little bit of an overreaction, because when you start talking about success in the NFL, especially a quarterback that's had success in the postseason, I put a little more weight on those performances. Like Jacoby Brissett stepped in when Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo were out. He had that start against the Buffalo Bills, and even though he couldn't throw the ball, it was serviceable enough for
him
to do the job.
And he was fine last year
with the Colts. And I know Seattle offered a second-round pick to trade for him, but I look at what Nick Foles did last year in that six-game sample size that we saw, and I'm saying I have confidence that in those critical moments, Nick Foles can make the plays.
And confidence is the key, because none of those other quarterbacks have the type of resume and have the type of, we've been through this before. So Nick Foles, even though you might not like it, his teammates, people like Chris Canty, they believe in him more. So when you decide to go to that backup, either for injury or because a guy's not playing, Philly has what the other teams don't. They have history, and they've had success with a guy who struggled, and they supported each other.
Chris Canty, thanks for joining us today.
Great
job.
Have a great weekend.
All right, you guys too.
Take care. Coming up, which rookie quarterback is ready to take over right now? That's next on First
Take. You're a nigga.
Drawing a blank, Odell Beckham reportedly about to sign a record-breaking deal for his position. Meanwhile, Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald are holding out for their own piece of history. CC, the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL is blank.
Well, I think that pass coverage in the league is underrated. People always say, well, if I'm going to start, if I can't get a quarterback, then I'm going to take a defensive player. Well, if you get a rush player, what if the rush don't get there? You know what's there every play? Coverage. So I'm going with a guy I believe going to emerge as the best corner, and that's Jalen Ramsey. One non-quarterback, Jalen Ramsey, because I'm going to have good coverage on every play compared to you don't always get a good rush.
Jalen Ramsey is, I think, the guy I would take defensively. Typically, in years past, my answer to this question has been Odell, but this year's a little different. I think this year the most valuable non-quarterback is a guy who's going to have to be his team's leading receiver, maybe his team's best blocker as well, and that's Rob Gronkowski. I think given the Patriots' injuries, given the suspension, given the lack of weapons, the new offensive lineman, Rob Gronkowski, this season is the most valuable non-quarterback in the league, given everything going on with New England.
All right, moving on to some rookies. Reports out of Buffalo this week are that Josh Allen will be making the start in the Bills' third preseason game. Many considered him to be the least NFL-ready. So, Nick, the rookie quarterback that will start the most games this year is blank.
The one I am most confident is going to start week one and will start all 16 unless he gets hurt, Sam Darnold. Like, can't start more than 16. I think the Jets' plan from the moment they drafted him, from the moment they traded from 6-3 was to start who they drafted from week one moving forward. New page in Jets history, so I say Sam Darnold.
Yeah, Josh Allen is going to start some games. Lamar is probably the least ready of all the rookies to play. He's going to play in week number one because they're going to have a package. But Sam Darnold will start the most games for a rookie because their plan as an organization was for him to start the most games unless he gets injured.
All right, last night the Eagles had an objectively bad performance in Cleveland. Since the NFL adopted the new playoff format in 1990, there's been at least four new playoff teams each year. So, CC, the NFC team that won't return to the playoffs this year is blank.
I think the team coming out of the NFC South, because I believe that to be the toughest division. You got Carolina there, Atlanta there, and New Orleans. I believe all three of those teams in the playoff hunt. But the team trying to be the first team ever to play in their home stadium, hosting Super Bowl 53, the Atlanta Falcons, I believe they won't make the playoffs.
I'm also going with the NFC South, a division that produced three separate playoff teams last year. But this year, everyone in that division schedule a little tougher because they draw the NFC East, they draw the AFC North. I don't think they're going to be able to pile up as many wins. I'm going with the Carolina Panthers. I hate the injuries on the offensive line. I don't have as much faith in Norv Turner and Cam. Norv Turner pairing up with Cam, I should say, as others do. And they're running.
How can you have faith in Cam when he didn't have Norv Turner? And then now they got Norv Turner. You'd be like, you think Norv's going to make him worse?
No, I don't know. But I think that their offensive line is objectively worse than it's been in years past. They already lost their right tackle. Matt Khalil, who's their left tackle.
They have more playmakers.
He's not. Well, I'm not certain of that either. I don't, because of the loss at running back in Jonathan Stewart, they have C.J. Anderson there. I don't trust the running game. I don't trust the offensive line. And I'm hopeful.
I didn't see you jumping off the Cam bandwagon.
I didn't. No. I didn't jump off no Cam bandwagon. Good quarterbacks miss the playoffs sometimes. It ain't going to be his fault in my eyes. Oh. I'm just letting you know right now. I think the offensive line's got issues. I don't think they have running game. Thankfully, they have Cam, preventing them from being one of the worst offenses in the league. But I don't think they can get to the 11 wins they'll need for the division.
Nick Wright with a lot of trust issues.
Well, I'm just letting you know.
Hey, there's six more preseason games tonight. I'm going to watch every single one of them. Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Cam Newton, all expected to take the field.
And no one will change that.
But, Nick, the player you're most excited to watch tonight is blank.
Jenna, you and I don't have a ton in common, but this is one of the things we're going to have in common. Player I'm most excited to watch. I know you're going to be dialed in. Case Keenum.
Oh.
Case has had under the radar rough preseason. He's completing 50% of his passes, passer rating around 65. He is the golden ticket starter in Denver. If for no other reason than they got nobody behind him. They got a first round pick who's been demoted to third string, a seventh round pick who's been promoted just because the first round pick stinks. Case is going to be the guy. He needs to play well going into the regular season. So I'm excited to watch Case Knight, see if he can turn it around.
Well, Nick's not excited about Carolina. I got to be excited to watch him. They got Cam another weapon, another high draft pick, the first wide receiver taken, DJ Moore. Jenna, in your six games tonight, make sure you check out DJ because he's going to be a good wide receiver. People that have been watching him practice say he might be the best wide receiver that they've had in Carolina since the legendary Steve Smith left there. So DJ Moore. For Cam, who don't have no weapons with Norv Turner.
And by the way, we have a lot in common. We both love Instagram, we both love the gym, and we both love parenting.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
How about the rest of the weekend? There's nine more games over Saturday and Sunday. Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, Jimmy G, all in action. CC, the player that you are most excited to watch this weekend.
I got to watch the Knicks guys. I got to watch the Chiefs, watch Pat Mahomes. Yeah. I believe because he's one of the good, young, exciting quarterbacks, but because of the weapons, what is the potential? Sammy Watkins has never been a dependable number one wide receiver. Knicks guy, he thinks he's a number one wide receiver. Yes, I love their running back, and I love their play caller in Andy Reid. So exciting things coming from the quarterback. The young guy, Patrick Mahomes.
That's a great answer.
I know a little bit about football.
I'm going with the guy the Panthers maybe should have drafted at wide receiver. Geez. James Washington. James Washington is the Biletnikoff winner last year. Kevin Colbert appears very early to found another excellent wide receiver outside of the first round in line of Emmanuel Sanders, Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, he doesn't need to spend first-round picks on wide receivers. He gets first-round talent. James Washington, see if he can duplicate what he did in the second preseason game. Excited to watch him this weekend.
I want you to look up the Biletnikoff winners the last 10 years and see how successful they've been.
How many of them went to Pittsburgh, where they churn out wide receivers. Dusty, get on it. I'm not sure. Hey, didn't your guy Larry Fitzgerald win the Biletnikoff?
Yeah, 15 years.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.